Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
The ride-sharing or ride-hailing company Lyft just rolled out a new offering this week for Chinese customers who visit the U.S. They can use a Chinese ride-hailing app called Didi to get a Lyft car. China is a place Lyft would love to get a foothold as it continues to expand. But the company is facing the same kind of hurdles as its much larger rival Uber on safety and labor issues. Joining us now as part of our View from the Top series of conversations with leaders is John Zimmer, co-founder and president of Lyft. He's with us from San Francisco. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I first want to ask you to describe what Lyft is. What is the difference between Lyft and Uber? Is there one?
Yeah, sure. So Lyft is the fastest growing on-demand transportation service in the United States. It's as easy as opening the Lyft app, clicking a button, and a friendly driver arrives within minutes. I think the two biggest areas of difference are one, our mission. My co-founder and I have been working on this project for over 9 years now. Lyft is just about 3.5 or 4 of those. And we've always wanted to bring people together through transportation. And I think the way that is felt by the customer is, you know, we treat you better. Drivers can earn tips. Drivers can earn driving bonuses. And by treating drivers better, drivers provide passengers with a better experience.
Couldn't drivers earn tips in Uber, though, too? I mean, you can leave an additional tip if you want to.
You could with cash, but in the app is one thing that Lyft does that our competitor does not.
And why do you think that's better for the customer? Isn't one of the nice things about Uber and Lyft as compared with a taxi that you don't have to think about a tip? It's included.
Sure. I mean, at the end of the Lyft ride, it defaults to zero. So there's no pressure. There's no, you know, in-car communication about that. But a lot of passengers say that they want the ability to choose to do that. And it's led to over $65 million that have been given to Lyft drivers because of the great service that they're providing their passengers.
You also, though, face some of the same challenges as Uber in terms of getting everybody on board with what you're trying to do. I get in taxis here, and sometimes there's a little circle with a slash through it that say both Uber and Lyft. These are taxi drivers who do not like the fact that your drivers in various places often face very different regulations than the taxi drivers.
Yeah, I think what's really important is to think about, you know, why we're doing this and where we came from. So the beginning of what we set out to do is that we looked at the big problem. We said transportation in the United States is the second highest household expense. Americans spend more money on their car and transportation than they do on food. And yet the car, which is that biggest expense, about $2 trillion every year by Americans, is utilized only 4% of the time. That's why we started Lyft. We said, okay, we can create economic opportunity for drivers, and we can bring down the cost of transportation for those that need it. In that process, there will be changes, and there will be, you know, regulatory challenges. But when we started Lyft about 4 years ago, we were the first to do it with people's personal vehicles. And so we had to create a new paradigm for regulations and for safety. And we said, you know, we want this service to be the safest thing people use. You know, I want my wife to use it, you know, all my loved ones to be able to use Lyft and have it be the safest transportation experience. So we launched with, from the very beginning, with criminal background checks and driving record checks, $1 million of insurance. And in most cases, those went above many of those that were required by existing regulated industries.
But in some cases, they do not. I see that, for example, you don't require drivers to be fingerprinted, whereas some taxi companies do require that.
Sure. Well, I think what the important thing is, what information are you getting from the fingerprint? When you compare often that specific type of background check, the data set is often limited to a county or state, whereas we look across, you know, a whole national database. Oftentimes, for those databases, the records are not updated on a frequent enough basis.
So what would you say to people who still say that you don't have regulations that are up to the same standards as taxi drivers?
I would argue that, you know, they look at the facts. And, you know, we've done scenarios where we've run a set of drivers through the local taxi regulations and through ours, and hundreds, if not thousands of drivers pass through their screening process and were unable to get through ours. And so, you know, one thing is having the right set of data, and the other thing is having strict criteria. And on both those, you know, we're very confident that we're taking the right steps. And again, you know, we are users of the service, and our family members are, and safety is a top priority.
What about the issue of how you classify the people who are driving for Lyft, of whether they are contractors or employees? The company has decided that they should be contractors, and by the way, Uber has as well, rather than employees. But there are many employees who believe, or many drivers, I should say, who believe that they should be employees of Lyft, that they would get better benefits and all kinds of other things that employees get that contractors don't.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're really excited to be part of the conversation of not only the future of transportation, but the future of work. The majority, I believe it's about 80% of drivers on our platform, are driving less than 15 hours. And the thing that they value most is flexibility. The flexibility to drive Lyft whenever they want, if it's a single parent in between, you know, caring for their kid. And that flexibility to go from this job to another job is a big reason why they work with Lyft. That said, it's also because we're kind of innovating in this new area, it's on us, and we feel responsible to find the right balance of benefits that we can provide, whether that's, you know, providing a portal to find the right healthcare solution, whether it's bonuses if you are driving, you know, a significant number of hours, giving back the full commission amount. Those are things that we're doing to make sure that, one, we preserve that flexibility, while at the same time take care of those people that are spending the most hours on the platform.
Do you think that a Lyft driver who is driving full time, as in 40 plus hours a week, should get benefits from the company, healthcare?
No, the approach we've taken, and we've seen actually, you talked a lot about the taxi industry. Historically, taxi drivers who actually drive a car that's owned by the taxi company, who are actually required to work a certain set of hours, which is not true for us, were treated or are treated as independent contractors. So there's a lot of precedent for that type of relationship. And so we feel that we can preserve the best amount of flexibility and additionally create a lot of value through benefits. As the example I gave, like it's a big deal that if you drive a certain number of rides that would equate to maybe, you know, 40 hours a week on the platform, you get back all your commissions. And then the driver can decide how they want to spend that, what we call power driver bonus.
But they would, you're saying that they could, if they want to go out and spend that money buying themselves healthcare on the open market, that's the solution to healthcare?
If that's an option, of course, that they have.
Where do you want to go next? What city are you not in that you want to get into?
Within the United States, we feel like we have phenomenal coverage. We have 200 cities in the U.S., the majority of which we've been able to launch. You know, there are various degrees of regulatory challenges, most of which we've gotten through. I think Houston is one exception.
And why is Houston the exception?
The regulations that were created specific to that market, we didn't believe fit the type of solution we're trying to create. So we want there to be maximum safety, as well as the ability for people, the most people who want to be involved, to get involved. And so when they create regulations that go beyond what either a taxi driver would do and have specific requirements like putting a fire extinguisher in the vehicle, you know, that they say would, you know, would lead to safety when it's not required for, you know, everyday vehicles, are things that we feel that's one small example, but that obstruct that person who wants to do this for a few hours a week from driving on the platform.
I noticed not too long ago Uber changed its logo, and one of the ideas behind that, I guess, was that they want to become more than just what we think of them as, which is a company that does what your company does. Does Lyft have ideas that Lyft wants to become more than what it is right now?
So I think we have been and will continue to focus on transportation. We see the opportunity for transportation so large that it's not as necessary to look at other industries. $2 trillion spent every year in the U.S. on owning cars, of which they're used 4% of the time, is a massive opportunity. And as we move forward, we're going to have the opportunity to impact how cities function and how cities are designed. And so where historically cities have been designed for cars, if you think of Manhattan, which is, you know, 70 to 80% paved and is designed for the car, when you make car ownership optional, you won't need parking lots in cities. You won't need as many roads, and you'll be able to make better cities because of that. So I think our focus on this massive transportation industry and impacting the cities that we work in will remain what we do for a long time.
Why does Lyft have a Y in it?
So at the beginning, we looked at naming possibilities, and I think one of our team members looked at lift.com, which was owned by Otis Elevator, and we said, well, let's create a word that actually we can own more, have a little fun with, and get the URL for.
And have there been any downsides of that you didn't think about at the time?
Not really. I mean, I think I'm sure like search performance, you know, might be better if it was spelled L-I-F-T, but at the same time, it gives us something we can own and a brand that people recognize and love.
Well, you know, there are a lot of people who think our show is H-E-A-R and now. It would make sense, but it actually is H-E-R-E here and now.
Nice.
So I guess we're in the same boat on that score. That's John Zimmer, the co-founder and president of Lyft. John Zimmer, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.